Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Wow. We're doing it on camera today, and your take to camera with that read, really delightful.
You and I have been QAing the Greatest Gen Con 2 Star Trek 3 episode ahead of when we drop it into the support feed.
Yeah, it may already be out by the time this episode comes out.
I hope so. That'd be good.
If you support us on a monthly basis at MaximumFun.org, keep your eyes peeled for that.
And what I heard, Ben, was a couple of happy guys.
Yeah.
A couple of happy guys happy to be doing a show. I'm not saying that we haven't been happy to do the show lately, but I heard something in my own voice during the live show that shocked me.
Yeah.
Just, it's hard to even describe.
You had a joie de vivre that has, for some reason, gone away to a large extent in 2020.
Yeah, it's taken a year to remove whatever that sound was. And now I want to get it back. I want to get it back big time, starting with my introduction on the show today.
I think we recorded that like mid-January in 2020 and had no idea the fucking freight train of misery that was bearing down on the world at that moment.
It felt good to hear that version of us.
Yeah. You said something recently that I've been thinking a lot about, which is that when we do a live show. it was just the word no. And every time I close my eyes, I have Adam Pranica's face in my mind's eye saying no.
That's why you haven't been able to get up over the top in a long time.
Yeah. No, but there's something really invigorating about being about to go out on stage for one of our live shows. And
that's a word for it.
And you suggested just trying to be mindful about bringing that to our regular records. And I really like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to share the trade secrets of a Greatest Gen live show, but there's a thing that we do before we go out on stage, like in those moments, the final seconds even, before we go out there, to get each other pumped up.
And I wonder if this is coming across like one of those Domino's pizza commercials where they're like, our pizza's been bad for a long time, and now we're committed.
And we've known it for quite a while. And it's only now that we've decided to do something about it. Taste the difference in the final 8 episodes of The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine.
Maybe we should hold off on any tweaks to our behind the scenes work until we get to Voyager. Should that be the plan?
I'm not making any promises at all.
You get nothing.
Hey, bit of business while we're here, just because it popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
We have both made a commitment to stopping checking our drunkshimoda@gmail.com inbox so much because it was kind of getting to be a drag. And it's nobody's fault.
It's like nobody should feel bad about this. But
are you proposing that we delete all the emails from that email box right now?
No, I'm just saying for context, like one shitty email in 250 where the rest are, hey, can I get the P.O. box or your show really means a ton to me. Here's why. That one shitty email like completely throws it off and makes it nightmarish to go into because it always feels a bit like a landmine. So we've both kind of backed away from checking that as much. But that left us with a bit of a problem, which is how, if people have something they would like to send us, do they do that? How do you get your hands on the P.O. box?
Mm-hmm.
We came up with a solution. Slide into those DMs, baby. Bill Tilly is taking over the duty of handing out the P.O. box address at the Greatest Trek social media accounts on Twitter and Instagram.
So let me get this straight. You described quite eloquently the idea of a message landmine existing mm-hmm. in a group of positive messages that would be sufficient enough to ruin a day. And right. And what you've done now is you've thrown Bill Tilly onto the landmine. How dare
thrown
you?
Him to the wolves. No, I think that well, Bill is getting hazard pay first and foremost, but also I think it's actually kind of fun because this way he can kind of screen what people would like to send a little bit and make sure that it's like I told him, like, we have so many trading cards and collectible card game cards and all other kinds of cards. We never need another shipment of cards. Like, we appreciate all the ones we've gotten, but we don't need any more. So we could just screen out the cards from here on in.
I'll take your Argyle cards. I'll take those.
Yeah.
The bubble lives, by the way.
Biff Yeager trading card, the only thing harder to get than a PlayStation 5 at the moment.
Yeah. An angle to this that I'm just now considering is that, like, I think Bill is inoculated from the landmine because whatever messages he gets aren't going to be at him.
Right.
Like the way they frequently were at us, you know? So
right.
So sliding into those sweet, sweet DMs, that's going to be a soft pillow.
It's a nice Bill soft Tilly. Pillow. Bill Tilly, one of the greats. We really appreciate everything he does for those social media accounts.
Yeah. Yeah. No mines for Bill.
If you send Bill Tilly a landmine, God help you.
Yeah, you're pretty much dead to me if that were to happen. And that is a forever state.
Yeah. No coming back from that, Adam. But do you want to see if there's any coming back from being imprisoned by the Breen?
I don't like the chances of that, but it's a guarantee that we're about to do an episode about it. Ben, it's Deep Space Nine, Season 7, Episode 18, Till Death Do Us Part, Part 2. Kind of an awkward title when you have parts on either side of the colon, right?
Yeah.
Well, people have been having fun with putting a colon between the parts for a long, long time. I would suggest that we get back to that.
Yeah, use a bidet before you do it, but it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The Sisko boys are debating what to do about this. The prophets don't want Ben to marry Cassidy situation.
I don't see why it's any of their business.
And not talking about the insane candles on Ben Sisko's desk.
Yeah, I like that part.
That's an amount of avoidance that I just could not wrap my head around. What is the deal with those candles?
Hey guys, it's me, Drew, and I'm here to do a Yankee candle haul.
They're so prominently in the frame so many times in this opening sequence.
They look Zeppelin-like. They're just really big.
Yeah, they are massive honkers.
And they're candy-colored, too. The colors of them do not seem in keeping with the beige type of look that most things Bajoran tend to look like.
Yeah. They've got Bajoran comm badges embedded in them. Is this a wedding present Do you think that's what this is?
They're never going to quit the ceremony if their comm badges are glued to them, right?
Well, they light them on fire, but then they get beamed out in the nick of time, right?
I like that Captain Sisko can talk to, for some reason, Jake about matters like these. Like, I know next to nothing about my dad's inner life. he wouldn't tell me anything if I asked. And I see a scene like this, and I'm like, wow, good for them. Like, this is heavy shit that they're having to discuss.
Yeah. My dad's opened up to me once or twice, and I didn't know what to do about it, so I just left the room.
Yeah, you take your comm badge off at that point.
Yeah. I resign my commission in the Harrison family.
You cannot resign.
There's an argument about semantics here, though, because Captain Sisko's like, the prophets told me some things about who may be your stepmom, but they didn't exactly tell me.
She who is my second wife.
Right. And for some reason, Jake's like, well, did they tell you not to marry her? And Captain Sisko's like, not exactly. And Jake
is like,
they didn't
tell me to marry her.
Yeah, where does that exactly leave them? Just that it's a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of bad ideas, Adam, Sisko hosts Kai Winn in his office, and she's kind of here to remind Ben Sisko that dumping Cassidy is not just going to be breaking off a wedding. It's going to be huge planetary news that will upset billions of Bajorans and her personally, because she wants to like usurp the role of officiating this wedding too.
I'll talk to Vedic Telna, and I'm sure he'd be willing to step aside.
This was some of the best Kai winning I've ever seen on the show. The taking over of an event by Kai Winn. It's never been done better than this.
Incredible. Flawless execution.
After her argument, she like stands up and does like the Olympics arms out thing to both Captain Sisko and the judges.
She sticks the landing.
Perfect.
Oh,
10.
Even the Russian judge gives her high marks.
Yeah. Really great work. It's an amazing performance that makes you admire it, even though it is just being the worst. Kai Winn is the worst, always has been, but I can't help but just love the performance.
She walks out of a meeting that has some pretty uncomfortable overtones in terms of, you know, her basically assuring him that he's going to find the path that the prophets set, and that whatever this big trial that they've been talking about coming up is, he's going to be able to handle it just fine. She walks out and is being offered quarters by Colonel Kira when she zips into what she interprets as a prophet vision.
May I show you to your quarters?
Well, thank you, my child.
Oh, here are the coffee mugs.
Yeah, it looks like she kind of skips a step on the way down into ops. And that sets this whole thing off.
I like the crash zoom into her head.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever done that for a prophet experience before.
Yeah. This is what she's always wanted. She's always wanted a moment like this, and she is, like, she's grabbing for boots to lick as soon as she's in this vision.
She rips her "Don't Tread on Me" flag in half. Says, "Please, Daddy, tread on me."
Yeah, they're extolling her with this message. They're like, "Only you can bring the restoration." And she's like, "Oh yeah, I'll restore anything you want. Just point it out. I'll be on my way.
I've got some paint stripper. I've got some sandpaper. I will restore anything. Woodwork.
Yeah.
You name it.
I just want brick."
She comes to. She's been tapped on the shoulder by the gods that she has wanted to talk to her entire life and given an important job. This is going great for Kai Winn.
Yeah. She's starting a new company, the Kai Winn Restorations Incorporated.
And yet the music seems so ominous. Why?
Yeah, it's weird.
Of the land. I don't understand.
On the Breen ship, Worf K. continues to scheme ways to escape. This is a quality that we've come to enjoy in many a war film on the hit podcast Friendly Fire. The idea that it is your duty to both please that booty and escape from a prison in a time of war.
And Worf already pleased that booty back on the planet that they got captured from. So now it's all escape all the time. And Ezri is not really into it.
Worf, face it. You're very drunk.
We haven't been given a lot in terms of timeline, but we do get a little bit of trivia here, Ben. 3 days is how long they've been in this prison. And every time we cut back to Deep Space Nine, I have been drumming my fingers like, well, certainly this will be the scene where Captain Sisko begins to care.
Somebody expresses concern about the absence of Ezri. I mean, I think they assume Worf is dead, but they got to be wondering about Ezri, right?
So often I feel like we get the dialogue hint that's like, well, if so-and-so is gone for longer than 48 hours, we'll know to send a rescue mission out for them. But there's never been that suggestion here.
I'm not back in 10 minutes. Call the police.
One thing that is mentioned in this scene is that their captors, the Breen, they don't even know what they look like.
Yeah.
Which made me wonder, why do the Breen keep those helmets on their own ship?
This is the way.
I guess so. I mean, over the course of the season, those Breen helmets are going to get shinier and shinier, right?
Right, yeah. It's getting easier and easier for them to talk. And it's not just because of all of the time they're spending together. It's easier to talk about Jadzia now that they've both been inside Ezri. On Cardassia, Damar's had a rough night, and I love the way they shoot Damar in this scene and also every scene where he gets drunk. He's just getting worse and worse looking as time goes on, getting those city miles.
He's 9 months into pandemic.
Yeah.
He's really let the alcohol kind of take the front seat whenever he's not at work.
I worked late last night.
He gets interrupted by Wei Yun, who comes in and is like, road trip! And Damar doesn't know what this road trip is about.
Where are we going?
You needn't concern yourself with that.
He's a little upset that it's going to interrupt some schemes he's got going with Dukat. And Wei Yun's like, all right, you can have like one more scheme with Dukat, but then we got to go on this cool road trip.
This is the beginning of a pattern of behavior that Wei Yun demonstrates, which is not really telling Damar anything at all about anything anymore.
I mean, like, Damar, I don't think, has done, like, a terrible job at being the evil legate of Cardassia. It's just that he's, like, a twerp. And I think that it's just that Change Leader doesn't like what a twerp he is. Not that she thinks he's, in like, particularly ineffective or anything.
It's not just that he's eaten plate after plate of their shit. There seems to be a quality to the shit-eating that...
Yeah.
That is not appreciated by them.
Yeah, the fact that he brings up the fact that he doesn't particularly enjoy shit as he's shoveling it into his mouth. They're like, we can't have this.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to bring in someone who seems to be enjoying it. At least
bootlicking Breen.
Yeah.
Oh, spoiler alert. We get a scene with Cassidy and Yisko. Where did that come from?
That's the Us Magazine version of
that's
of their
when
coupling.
Yates and Sisko get together. It's Yisko. Yeah, it's the honey, we have to talk scene.
Fuck!
And because like I think in that first beat, she is away on a cargo run, and so Sisko is just alone at home with his thoughts beating him up, but. What he says is like, hey, listen, you know my mom who is a ghost and also maybe a time-traveling super alien? She doesn't like that you're not the same religion as me and has sort of forbidden us from getting married. And I know that I'm my own man, but honestly, like, shit could go really wrong in my family if I don't listen to my mom on this.
Well, that almost sounds like a threat.
That's some weak tea, Sisko.
I love how Penny Johnson plays this moment because she can't even be upset. The way that it is so hard to be upset at someone who puts their religion ahead of your relationship. She just kind of puts the ring on the table, grabs her bag, and walks out. It's not worth arguing with him about this. And I kind of miss that this wasn't a conflict throughout. Like, we get a little bit more of this conflict throughout the episode, but we don't really know what Cassidy's feelings are about the prophets or Ben Sisko's religion. And we don't really get a clear picture of Jake's feelings about it either, other than they constantly put his dad's life in danger. And that's a thing that makes him uncomfortable. You know,
I wish Cassidy had established friendships with other characters on the show. She kind of seems like she's relegated to scenes with Sisko in them.
Yeah.
But if she was like homies with Bashir or somebody, like, that she could, like, if we'd gotten a scene of her sitting at the bar talking to somebody about what she's going through, that would have been great.
She fails the Kadektel test. Is that a thing?
Is that the Klingon version of the Bechdel test?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Honey, we have to talk. You never like hearing that.
Because I know every time we need to talk, we need to talk about some shit that I gotta do.
Around the same time, Dukat has arrived on the station, and he is jazzed to be there. He looks great out of Cardassian loaf, by the way. I just think Mark Alamo cuts a great line, like, just as a normal looking Bajoran guy on the station.
Yeah. I wondered, though, like, this is the Butcher of Bajor, surgeried to look like a Bajoran, but is he Clark Kenting?
It's a great, yeah, that's tough, man.
Like, I kind of feel like Bajorans would clock him and be like, fuck, man, you look like the Bajoran version of the worst guy in history.
Yeah, it's
I don't want to insult you, dude, but the resemblance is uncanny and fucked up.
It's what has made walking around with Cristelia hair so troubling for me over the past few months. I don't like it.
With your face mask on, as far as anybody can tell, you might be Cristelia.
I feel like the episode is self-aware about this, and it weaponizes it, because there are scenes later on where Kywin will look at him and I'm like, oh, this is the moment where she finally gets it, right? She sees Gul Dukat in his eyes, but that moment never comes.
Interesting leap of faith there asking us to take. Yeah. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We got to cut back to this Breen ship. Ezri's having Breen mares, and she wants to talk about him, and Worf doesn't. Classic, you know, the person that had the dream always wants to unpack it, and dreams are inherently uninteresting to the person that didn't have them.
I was so cold, I could barely breathe.
It is over now.
I don't know what's worse, Ben, being in a Breen prison, having your roommate experience loud nightmares, or having your roommate in a Breen prison wanting to tell you about their dreams.
¿Por qué no las dos?
Yeah. So Worf fashions a noose out of some bed sheets and does the only thing he can.
I mean, also feeling a bit threatened that this dream features Julian Bashir and not him.
Right.
So
Ezri has to flip over her bed linens to the other side to hide just how tantalizing the dream was.
She's talking about, like, using her skills of a counselor to kind of analyze the symbolism in this dream. And one of the things she says is that, like, she's in a cave in the dream. And she says maybe the cave symbolizes a womb. And I feel like if that is true, then we need to reanalyze, like, every third episode of Star Trek that has ever been produced.
Yeah.
They kind of get interrupted by some Breen guards who come in with cattle prods, and Worf is like, oh, cool. Is it my birthday or something? And
is this a Klingon holiday I'm unaware of?
I lost track of time in here. What day is it, technically?
So do you want me to disrobe, or do you want to just tear all my clothes off yourselves? I'm not. How orthodox do you want to be about this?
They stun him and drag him out of there. And I think that's a fade to commercial.
It's a moment that's probably less painful than listening to Ezri try to do therapy on her own dreams, though. So it's probably pretty grateful for this.
The Kai is having a little prayer sesh and gets interrupted by her assistant, Solbor, who is here to say that she has a visitor. A man has requested an audience with her. Pretty easy to get an audience with the head of the planetary religion.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
It's like showing up in the Vatican and being like, hey, if I could have five with the Pope, that would be awesome. And then being like, cool, we'll see what we can do.
I don't know. You're a little old for an appointment. I love the set design of this scene. Kaiwin looks to be praying out loud in front of a Bajoran money wheel like you'd see in Vegas. Like, the least popular table game at a Vegas casino is always that money wheel. I've never seen anyone play it.
She's been given a few fortune cookie-like signs to look for in somebody that's going to come and help her from her prophet vision. And Dukat is the guy that comes in and obviously knows what all these signs are. So he kind of peppers into conversation little turns of phrase about him being a man of the land and having a great plan and having a brother named Stan and loving the dessert flan.
Of the land? I don't understand.
This is a great scene for Dukat because he is uniquely able to bullshit his way through a moment like this. Like, he's so practiced at being a fraud that yeah. Kai Wynn really doesn't stand a chance. Like, Kai Wynn's a fraud in her own right, but in a fraud versus fraud situation, I don't
oh yeah, I
don't know
that
anyone
old can, comic strip from Mad Magazine.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone can beat Dukat at this game.
Yeah. Well, and he has the benefit of having like a plan put in place that he is participating in. Like, the yeah. Pa Wraiths are fully helping him.
They set her up to be yeah. knocked down in this way.
She is so excited to get knocked down. She is so excited to have a real job from what she thinks are the prophets that she basically just brings Dukat into her orbit, like even closer than Solbor immediately.
Yeah.
They're having tea. They're talking over restoring the soil. And she's like, restoration? That's great. I was just thinking about that stuff.
We get an angle of Goldicott's face that is positively like the Grinch smiles, you know? Like a bigger smile than you think Mark Alamo can possibly yeah. make. It's awesome.
Is that just because he has to kind of hold off because it would mess up the loaf if he smiled that big most yeah. of the time?
Yeah, it's tough stuff.
You always hear about how long they spend in the makeup chair getting it on. I bet they spend a long time in the makeup chair getting it off, too.
And I bet it hurts. It's got to hurt in a way that application does not.
But it exfoliates beautifully. I mean, you can, like, we finally see Mark Alamo's skin and he is just glowing.
I was just going to say, like, I wonder if it acts like those Biore nose strips where it's just yanking the shit out of every pore as soon as you finish a shoot day.
Yeah.
That can't be bad.
Beautiful.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Kira and Sisko are going over some work stuff before Sisko changes the subject to personal stuff. And this is a scene that made me think about how intentional a person can be when they're asking advice and they choose which person to ask advice from. Like, Sisko could ask for advice about his relationship from anyone, but when you ask Kira for advice about something related to the prophets, I think you can predict what kind of answer you're going to get. And naturally, Kira is pro-prophets in this
right.
argument.
That sort of feels like the kind of call that Dan Savage gets from time to time of somebody calling in for permission to dump their significant other. Like,
right.
they already know that they need to do it, but they just kind of need to hear it from someone else.
Right. That's why Kira in the scene is like, if you can't be GGG with Cassidy Yates, then DTKYA.
I was worried that Sisko was going to break his little ships in this scene.
No!
that one that he touches doesn't look like it's on the stand very firmly.
No.
I wonder how surprising that was for him during the take.
Ooh, this nebula is not as well mounted as one would hope.
Yeah. On the tick, Wei Yun is on the bridge when Change Leader arrives. The ship is 36 hours away from a rendezvous point that we are unclear about at this moment. Right. And Change Leader's looking pretty flaky.
I think the flakiness of dress really goes a long way to sell how sick she looks.
Yeah, the dress flake is a great detail for sure. Good thing there's a lot of shower grab handles on the bridge of that tick, you know?
Yeah.
I don't imagine the Jem'Hadar using those. They were installed just for her.
Yeah.
She's got a sit-down bathtub and recorders, a bunch of grab handles on the
One
bridge.
Of those toilet seats that's got like really thick padding.
Her comm system and recorders as the big buttons. She's got the whole thing going.
She's wearing a life alert around her neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reveal that Change Leader is in play. Big reveal. We get to the Breen ship very suggestively, I felt. Like, because... not sexually suggestive, but just like the fact that there is like an opposing action between the direction that the tick is flying and the direction that the Breen ship is flying.
I feel like such a dumbass I didn't pick that up.
The show really implies that they're flying toward each other.
I never picked up on that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Just an idiot.
You don't need to feel bad, Adam.
You know
it's
what?
Subtle.
This is why this show has two hosts.
You might have been looking down, typing a note or something. A great little bit about grab handles or something.
I looked in the sand during the show, and I only saw your footprints there.
That's because you were like lying on the beach half a mile down with a pina colada in your hand, enjoying life, baby.
I'm not going to walk with you. You're off doing your own thing.
Yeah, you check out the tide pools by yourself, you dork.
Back in this Breen cell, it's Worf's turn to have the loud dreams. Turns out they're being interrogated with some clip show devices, and I'm really glad that we aren't getting those scenes. Because that would have pushed out this 10-part conclusion into like, what, like a 30-part conclusion that recaps the entire show?
Yeah. And like you get the sense that the Breen clip show devices aren't that good. So it'd be just like really confusing clip shows that don't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're taking turns on Ezri and Worf here in a way that is troubling to them both.
Yeah. They're like, we kind of want to do this together.
If you and I were prisoners, wouldn't you prefer that we be tortured at the same time? I kind of would. You want to be on the same schedule as your bunkmate in prison, I think.
If you and I were tortured, I feel like you'd be down the hall in one room and I'd be down the hall in the other room and we would just be ratting each other out entirely.
No
question.
We would
turn on each other so fast in a torture situation.
I mean, I have a pretty high pain tolerance. It's the other stuff that I wouldn't want to deal with. Like,
yeah, like shitting yourself. And
yeah. Can we please move this along?
Yeah.
it's more just the taking of my time, I think, I would have the biggest problem with.
I have to start cooking dinner. We eat at 6. This is taking forever.
Look, if I don't get these things defrosted right now, it's going to be a big problem for me.
The complaints from my wife will be withering.
Much in the same way as you described our ships driving toward each other, I really like that we cut to this moment of torture to Gul Dukat's enjoyment of the wine. Like, we're getting very different feelings as we cut back and forth.
It's extraordinary. I've never tasted anything like this.
Dukat and Wynn are living it up, drinking that fine Bajoran spring wine.
They're getting white wine drunk, right?
They're getting white girl wasted, and they're talking about, like, hey, like, I don't mean to speak out of school here, but sometimes I wonder if that Sisko guy is really on the side of the Bajoran people. And Kai Winn, who is calling him Angel, is saying, like, you've been anointed by the prophets too, so you're on his level now. You can say whatever the fuck you want about that asshole.
Yeah, you've ascended to the wine level of this of this club. Good for you.
You must speak your mind freely, Angel.
But it's pretty clear that they have a mutual hatred of Sisko, but they also have something else in common, which is this backstory that he tells her about how he barely survived the Cardassian occupation of Bajor.
I survived the occupation purely by chance.
And it was one of the like few times in Kai Wynn's experience during the occupation where she did something that was resistance adjacent, which was that she gave valuable jewels to Cardassian officers to do slightly nicer things to Bajorans.
It's a good thing Kai Wynn developed a relationship with Galbarachi.
She was not pulling up in a Citroën outside of a Bajoran cafe and gunning down a bunch of Cardassian officers. She was just paying them off.
I love this shit. The idea that both of them have this special knowledge that they can use against each other in a moment like this.
Yeah.
Like Goldikai uses her knowledge as a way to confirm his undercoverness.
Yeah.
In a really elegant way.
Some of the best like con man Dukat stuff right alongside some of the best Craven Kai Wynn stuff in this episode.
Yeah. How did you feel about Kai Wynn after this story? It actually bumped up her stock to me a little bit. Like, I didn't know she did resistant shit. Good for you, I mean, Kai Wynn.
Yeah, it's like the kind of resistance shit where you're like, yeah, I mean, like, I guess technically that did help a tiny bit, but also
rich
like,
person resistance is bullshit though.
Right. Yeah. It's like you didn't actually like make any sacrifices of your own.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, like I'd rather she did than didn't. You know, I'd rather the rich give to charity than not.
True that.
What are you doing now?
So in Sisko's quarters, he's sleeping on the couch, or trying to anyway. Like he's punished himself. Cassidy doesn't live there anymore. He's still sleeping on the couch out of some guilty conscience feelings. I realized that the model that he's built for that Bajoran house has a grass roof.
Yeah, it really reminded me of the Jurassic Park Command Center playset that I had as a boy.
Jurassic Park electronic talking command compound. Figures and dinosaurs sold separately. Batteries not included.
Did that have a grass roof?
It did have a grass roof. I mean, like molded plastic, but yeah, made to look like grass.
Wow.
Kind of roof.
That's fun. Yeah.
It was great. It could push a button and it would go, you didn't say the magic word.
Sisko is obviously down, but it takes a Quark to take him out. Because when Quark enters with the wedding ring that Captain Sisko ordered for Cassidy Yates, it is like flipping over the couch that Sisko's on and then just stomping his heart after.
Tyrellian diamonds aren't that easy to come by, especially with this war on.
It's non-refundable.
This is the counsel that he didn't seek. Like when he went to Kira for advice on this situation.
Right.
He specifically did not go to Quark.
Yeah, who, for good reason.
For all of his failings, is a hopeless romantic.
Pretty ring, though, I thought.
That is one of the sickest diamonds.
Fully bedazzled right now.
It's the sort of ring that I think you'd see on an older lady well off, you know? Like mm-hmm. that kind of Beverly Hills giant ring situation.
It is a Real Housewife of X City got engaged scale of rock in this ring.
It's the sort of ring that you don't see being worn by someone living in a grass hut on Bajor.
Yeah.
That hand's not going to be doing dishes or farm work.
It's like that, Californicators move here to make their little rural existence, and look how fucking fancy they are. There goes the neighborhood.
Those hands aren't going to be doing manual labor on Bajor, that's for sure.
No. Cut back to the prison ship. Now, Ezri is having really vocal nightmares that, I mean, like, the stuff she's saying is, like, specifically very incoherent, but a couple of times she mentions Julian again, and this disgusts Worf.
It is not fair to be judged over what you're saying, over anesthesia, or after torture or whatever. Yeah. Not fair at all.
I couldn't believe, I mean, like, I could believe it because it's Worf, but I couldn't believe what a jerk he was being.
Yeah. Yeah. If you'd forgotten just how big of a jerk Worf can be, he's here to remind you in this and every Worf-centric episode up to now. I read that that they're considering bringing Worf in for the next season of Picard just to, like, shit all over everyone and and be a jerk.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
If you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
Kai Winn gets woken up on the late night. Solbor has let Angel in. He's got great news. The plants that he planted on his farm that he's trying to restore in Reliketh are growing way earlier than they're supposed to.
I planted radishes in the special dirt and they came up all weird.
They usually take weeks to sprout, but...
And that's not the only thing possibly coming sooner than expected.
Yeah, not the only thing poking above the surface, because she agrees with him. This is a sign, and they get down, baby.
The prophets brought us together.
It feels like there was an entire decade where the only kind of movie in the theater was aging Alec Baldwin or Jack Nicholson falling in love in old age with, like, Helen Hunt or... God, I don't even know, but it feels like that was the movie that everyone went, that all of our parents went to see for a number of summers in a row, you know?
Yeah, and this it was is kind of like the reaction to the erotic thriller of 5 years before that.
Yeah, like, and invariably, if you were to go to one of these movies in the theater with your parents, like, you'd see more of Meryl Streep than you had bargained for.
Right. You'd be sitting in between your mom and dad wondering what possessed you to agree to go out to the movies with them.
Like, I really admire Anthony Hopkins showing full butt.
Speaking of older men, Adam, Solbor really seems like he is suffering under this arrangement at this point.
I feel like the actor who plays Solbor is doing a lot to make himself noticeable in a very fun way.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like he may be the same guy that they've had running around with Kai Winn several episodes. But, like, in this late night scene when he comes in and he doesn't have the hood over his head, you can see that he just looks like a senator from Nebraska or something.
Right. This episode, he seems to be making choices.
Yeah, it feels very funny to see him play up how undignified he thinks this all has been.
It's a living.
The whole Sam and Diane dynamic between Dukat and Winn is out the window. They're an item.
It's kind of a Sam and the Damned situation.
Whoa!
Cassidy is packing up her shit ahead of her next gig. She's in the cargo bay, you know, doing freighter captain stuff, clearly on the clock. And I think this detail is important because when Ben Sisko enters the scene, he's psyched. Because guess what, Cassidy? I've changed my mind, which means you don't have to work anymore.
Yeah, you can live off my fat emissary of the prophet's salary, stacked on top of my fat Starfleet salary.
You can't help but notice when Cassidy just walks out of the cargo bay with him not saying a word to anyone that she works with.
Yeah, they're like, so are we supposed to take the shipment without you? Or
it's got to be so crazy making. Like, the effect of Sisko's equivocations are seen mainly on Cassidy in her life, but there's that ripple effect that goes far wider to so many more people.
Totally. I was kind of amazed that it was as easy for him to win her back as he does, because he's like, hey, I really blew it in that previous scene when I expressed misgivings about getting married to you. And she's like, well, like, as long as you promise not to go back on this, I will marry you.
I gotta level with you, Ben. I didn't want this. I didn't want this to happen that fast. I don't think Captain Sisko deserved the comeback so soon.
Yeah, I think that some rebuilding, some restoration to put it in Dukat terms, would have been good. But yeah, it happens really fast. They make it belt buckle official in like the next scene.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a phaser rifle wedding. Because they've pivoted away from Bajoran style wedding and into a Starfleet wedding. And this really put Admiral Beltbuckle into a stressful situation because he had to get one of those subspace ordained minister forms filled out, which is sweet when you want someone you know to officiate a wedding, but I think everyone can kind of agree is not the real thing.
Kind of a weird mood in this wedding too, right? Like when they come in, everybody's kind of like sitting around almost like they're waiting for a funeral to start.
Yeah.
Is that because Kira is pissed that Sisko is not taking her advice?
I think everyone's mood is a little dour because they haven't moved the death wall out of the wardroom ahead of the wedding ceremony.
Well, Beltbuckle is doing the speechifying of any wedding officiant, and he says, does anyone here see any reason these two should not get married? Speak now or forever hold your peace. And Sisko flashes into a prophet experience where his mom makes one last pitch and he says, "No, Mom, I'm my own man. I'm going to marry Cassidy whether you like it or not."
Do you get the sense that prophet experiences happen in real time? Because it's unclear to me whether or not Ben Sisko puts the ring on Cassidy's finger and pauses halfway through for the amount of time that we get the prophet experience. Like, I wanted to cut back into the room.
Devastating.
I wanted to cut back into the room so bad as everyone's looking at Ben Sisko like, he's not finished putting the ring on. What is he doing? What's taking so long?
Is he hesitating or is he having like a grand mal seizure or what?
Yeah, but with a flair for the dramatic, Sisko snaps back too and finishes the ring making. And everyone's happy. Mazel tov.
And he plants one on her. It's official. Sisko is a married man.
Do you kind of wish this episode was called Until Death Separates You?
I did think that was a strange turn of phrase.
As was the vow as put to us by Admiral Beltbuckle.
Yeah, why did they not have that as the title? If the title is Till Death Do Us Part, why is that not the line? Or if the line is Till Death Separates You, why is that not the title?
Gotta say, I like Until Death Separates You.
Until death causes you to move into the other bedroom down the hall?
Until death makes you sleep on the couch next to your model house.
So on the brain ship, Worf is ultra pissed off at Ezri that her delusional ramblings included the name of a man he feels threatened by.
I should not have trusted you with my heart.
And they don't really resolve this, do they?
No.
Like, there's an admission, like Worf wants her to admit that she has feelings for Bashir, and she's like, I mean, like Jadzia did and I do too. Like, he is a friend. It's not, like, there's nothing official about it in either case.
It's more of a question of volume, Worf, because you see, Dr. Bashir was a person on Deep Space Nine, and that immediately qualifies them as potential love interest for Dax. I really don't think you should take this too personally.
Yeah, but the Breen barge in, and they all beam over to the Tick. They're there with Weyoun and Damar and the Breen. And it is announced to them here that the Breen will be joining the war on Team Dominion.
Turns out, Ben, that there are two marriages this episode.
Yeah. And it is a big shit-eating Weyoun grin to theme.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode?
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it! Do it!
I really did. I think this is one of my favorites in a while.
Solid episode.
Yeah. This is not to say that I have disliked this season of Deep Space Nine or the series of Deep Space Nine itself in saying something like this, but whatever it is about this last series of episodes, I really can't wait to watch the next in a specific way, in a unique way. And it's, yeah, like I immediately want to watch the next episode because of it. And I think that's the sign of a good one. I'm hooked.
I agree. Yeah, I feel much the same way. I feel like the Kai Winn stuff and the Dukat stuff is just so juicy. It's so, they're like so well written to be hateable that watching them scheme and connive and then start boning was just amazing. Like I was really worried about the Clark Kent issue with Dukat when he first showed up on the station, and I like completely forgot about it once he started interacting with Kai Winn, because it was just like, I don't care, it's too fun.
I think I want to say also that, I mean, and because I just can't be 100% positive about anything anymore in my life, the one thing that cuts against the episode is clearly the elevation of guest stars above the main cast characters in this episode, and maybe the last couple episodes too. Like, aside from Captain Sisko, it's really the guest star show at this point. And that isn't to say that the guest stars aren't doing great work, because they are, but it's just to the exclusion of some characters and some actors that we really like.
It's like you asked for Crunch Berries and you got Oops All Villains.
It is exactly like that, Ben. But for right now, what I'm asking for is all P1s.
Hmm.
You think that's a taste that satisfies?
I think that's part of this balanced breakfast.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
We actually do have some P1s here, Adam, and the first one is of a promotional nature. Goes like this. Attention, all FODs in the greater Seattle Tacoma area. If you're looking for someone to tackle the dirty and dangerous task of window washing and roof and gutter cleaning, give Northern Services a call. We are one of Seattle's best exterior cleaning services and the only one dumb enough to invest in this podcast.
Wow.
Our body of work includes moss removal on Ferenginar, window cleaning on the promenade, and pressure washing Riker's quarters. Don't go up the long ladder yourself. And the call to action is visit northernserviceswa.com to schedule your appointment.
I love this. I love this promotional message. I love a very specific promotional message for one. But also, having lived in Seattle for many years and being a homeowner there, you find yourself an outfit that will do your roof and your gutter and your windows that you can trust, that does a good job. And that is a relationship that you make for life.
Yeah.
Like, those are really, those are difference makers when you live in Seattle, where 90% of home ownership is water remediation.
Like, when we got our house, I put a ladder along the side of the house and went up to look in my gutters, and I just laughed at myself for even checking them, because there's just nothing in them.
There was just another sun inside.
Yeah. LA does not have that problem, but yeah, like, I mean, you hear all the time about how, like, dads falling off ladders because they were cleaning out their gutters or something is like a huge cause of injury and death among homeowners.
It's statistically terrifying that it's so common. I think about it every time I get on a ladder.
So farming this out to a professional who like knows how to do it in a safe way and can do Star Trek bits with you in between doing the work? Come on! NorthwestServicesWA.com.
That's who I'd be calling if I still lived in Seattle. Well, Ben, our second priority one message is of a personal nature this time. It is from QAnon, son of none.
Oh, no.
It is to the Star Trek CCG Continuing Committee, and the message goes like this. See you in court, motherfuckers. P.S. Wow. Neil is a Patak. P.P.S. Hail Hydra. P.P.S. Trust the process.
Oh, no.
I've got to express some gratitude for the pronunciation key here. advising me that the pronunciation of QAnon is in fact QAnon.
Wow. Well, some terrifying internet cultists apparently listen to us, I guess, and have some kind of axe to grind with the Star Trek.
I think these people are innocent. I think QAnon stole the name from this QAnon, and it's an unfortunate situation.
Wow. Yeah. That's certainly possible, because they spell it a little bit differently. I see here there's a uppercase Q, and then there's a dash, and then lowercase anon.
Right.
So, wow. Well, I hope that's the case, Adam. If you'd like to get a Priority One message.
That's me making excuses for QAnon.
If you'd like to get a promotional message or a personal message on the show, you can do it. All you got to do is go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for the former and $200 for the latter. And don't get injured on a ladder.
Gotta get that, gold press ladder.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, we talked about him earlier. I'm going to give it to the actor instead of the character, though. James Otis is the guy who plays Sobor. And whatever got into him on his shoot days was working.
Yeah, totally.
He walks right up to playing big and then takes a step back from big into just really interesting. And that is just exactly the spot that an actor on the periphery of a scene needs to occupy, I think.
Yeah, he is for sure my drunk Shimoda as well, like for the same reason. I mean, I asked myself who is having the most fun in this episode, and it is that guy.
Yeah, high marks for James Otis, a guy I hope goes on a nice long run here. As long as Kai wins on the show, I got to believe there's going to be a soul bore.
Yeah, he doesn't have many lines, but everything he does well.
He doesn't need a lot of lines with that face.
That's true. Well, Adam, do you want to see what we got next in store for us on this here program?
We can't stop now, Ben. You're going to tell us what episode is next, and then I'm going to go over to the Game of Buttholes World of Prophets to see how we're going to be talking about it.
Yeah, so the next episode is Season 7, Episode 19, Strange Bedfellows, while Worf and Esri face execution. An alliance between enemies threatens to turn the tide of the war against the Federation.
Hmm. Hey, who's got the role here?
I believe it is my role today.
All right. I realized that I just snatched the die out of your hand, but it's not intentional.
Hey, don't sweat it, buddy. We are on square 58 presently, which puts us in range of a space butthole that could take us down to a Quark's bar and also a Starship Mine episode. I don't believe we've ever hit that Starship Mine.
Yeah, that being the square where you and I build a spaceship model while recording the show.
Yeah, that's like the distracted episode, I believe, is what that is intended to be.
So in other words, it'll sound like every other show we've ever put out.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and roll this bone.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, boy. I rolled a 5, which puts us right in between that space butthole and the Starship Mine. It's all a regular episode. And we've jumped past one of the biggest hazards on the board. That space butthole that can really tank our chances of getting to a Mournhammered.
Let's not let it hurt us, Ben.
Yeah. All right, Adam. Well, that was the episode. We've got a few thank yous to give out. Of course, we should thank Bill Tilly, who runs our social media accounts and deals with the radioactive material that is the comments.
Bill's wearing the of gloves as he checks the DMs.
But if you'd like to send something in for a future mailbag, Marin, we love receiving stuff. It's totally appreciated, and Bill will get you set up with the address to send it to. We really appreciate everything he does. The @GreatestTrek accounts on Instagram and Twitter are super fun things to follow. Highly encouraged.
We're able to do fun things like that and pay people for the work they do. Thanks in large part to the support we get at MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks to everyone who has considered us a small business and has become a member during the month of December. I know we really appreciate it.
If you're thinking about gift ideas for Friends of DeSoto in your life, you can now gift a membership at MaximumFun.org/join. And that's a great way to give them access to all of the fun stuff on the bonus feed and also help support our show. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
It's not just how great your voice and my voice sounds on the show. There's another element to the program that makes it sound so good, Ben. Of course, I'm talking about the music created by Adam Ragusea with a little bit of an alley-oop from the great Dark Materia. They have combined to create the theme and interstitial music for The Greatest Generation for years and years and years ahead.
It's awesome work that they do. We really love all the music that Adam Ragusea has made for us. We're excited to hear the new stuff he's, I'm sure, working on at this very minute. But if you'd like to see other stuff that he works on, he's got a great YouTube cooking channel, far more famous and popular than this show at this point. And well deservedly.
I'm way behind on my Ragusea cooking videos. I gotta luxuriate in an afternoon watching a bunch of those. They're great.
That's a fun like Saturday morning watch. Just like get a little playlist of goose vids.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that crawls right into bed between Gul Dukat and Kai Winn.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.